The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The biggest threat to Americans is not jihadists overseas. It's homegrown domestic terrorists inspired by white supremacists.
The gravest terrorist threat to the homeland is domestic violent extremism.
Domestic terrorism is our number one threat.
Domestic terrorism has been steadily increasing, and that threat needs to be addressed.
Domestic terrorist groups are really starting to surge in this country. It's a big concern.
We know that domestic terrorism is a grave threat, but what can we do to stop it?
What we need is to take the laws we already have and apply them to white people.
If we can go after international terrorists, why can't we do it at home?
Today, we're mostly looking at our neighbors rather than Osama bin Laden that's far off in Afghanistan.
Bin Laden and co. didn't have supporters and sympathizers among the House Republican caucus.
The Republican Party is basically a domestic terrorist cell at this point, and they should be treated as such.
There are elements of the GOP that are starting to look like the jihadists.
Al-Qaeda wasn't umbilically linked to the American conservative movement in the way that these domestic extremists clearly are.
Domestic terrorists vote and international terrorists don't.
MAGA and the domestic terror threat is much more worrisome than any foreign threat.
Al-Qaeda wasn't white, and white terrorists have a certain advantage, a certain, what's the word I'm looking for? Privilege. White terrorists don't cause widespread fear or panic in the same way that brown terrorists with big beards tend to.
It is domestic white terror that is the greatest threat to our way of life.
Right-wing domestic violent extremism is the single greatest threat facing this country.
There is a serious right-wing domestic terrorism problem in this country.
President Trump is gone, right? And the extremists are not.
The Republican Party is the getaway driver for these domestic terrorists.
What I would call MAGA terrorists.
You're either with them or with us.
You have a Republican Party that sits mute while domestic terrorists plot the next overthrow of the U.S. government.
I don't think we've improved much since the Oklahoma City bombing. In fact, I think we may be in a worse position.
There are 100 McVeighs out there that are thinking about a bombing or thinking about an attack, and it's a much more dangerous landscape than any time in the last several decades.
Just a sampling there of some of the nightly news that I'm sure Merrick Garland enjoys watching night in and night out. He didn't just make a mistake with a couple of words. Domestic terrorists, as you know, they're going right after parents. Parents are finally pushing back, but this was not something where he just misspoke. He's just, it's the same thinking. And this is all that they have. They're terrorists. They're political opponents. They're terrorists. They're insurrectionists. They're racist. Notice they don't really dwell on the policies so much. The fact that the economy's cratering, for example. We'll get to that and quite a lot more on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily, not brought to you by Pfizer. We can all be thankful for that. Not brought to you by really any advertisers to speak of. It's just offered freely, every day. Live stream is at our website, thetrumpet.com/live gets you to the video production every day, or the podcast if you'd like to listen on demand. And of course, we send out the audio stream of this show every day through CRN Digital Talk Radio. That's Channel 3 on their platform. Hard to believe it's already the last program of the week. Here we are, right at the end of the week. It's been a busy week, as it always is, here at our headquarters campus. And it'll be a busy weekend as well, a fun weekend for some of us as we head out for an outreach to see some of you listeners a little ways away from here. We certainly do. Thank you, though, for joining our growing audience. So this is what the communists have. It's all that they have. They can't win the argument on policy. And so they accuse all Republicans, as you heard there, as being terrorists. domestic terrorists. And it's so bad, as you've heard this week on this show, that even the Department of Justice is going after parents who are critical of critical race theory, or critical of some of the mask mandates, or critical of some of the transgender policies that schools are imposing on children, little children. Listen to this from Joy. This too is revealing, because they know the Biden presidency has been a disaster. And here's a radical leftist saying that, well, at least it's not Donald Trump. Clip 7.
You know, I would venture to say that even if he doesn't get a lot done, he still would be better than having Trump back.
Oh, well, of course. That's obvious. Even if he doesn't do anything, as long as Trump's not back in there, because he was Hitler, and his supporters, they're still here. They are terrorists. They're terrorists. It's not just one or two wackos saying this. It's all of them, as you heard in that montage. That's put together, by the way, by Grabian. Pretty lengthy montage. It's just standard fare for those nightly cable news networks. But the policies and even the politicians themselves, you think about the chants going around at college football matches and such all across the country. This is a president, a fake one at that, whose job approval rating is just plummeting. I thought this was revealing, too. This is the Chicago mayor. I forget the event that she was introduced to speak at. But listen to the crowd's reaction to Mayor Lori Lightfoot at a recent event. Clip 8. Yeah, listen to everyone booing. And then what are they going to think about the good mayor of New York City? Today is the deadline for people working for the city of New York. It's jab or else. We went, as Ron DeSantis recently said, we went from 15 days to slow the spread to if you don't get fully vaccinated, you're fired. You're fired. Doesn't matter if you work for law enforcement. It doesn't matter if you work for the fire department, you're gone. This is the first today, 5 p.m. in New York City. This is the first of quite a few deadlines coming up in the next few weeks. Jab or else, just like the trumpet cover said a few months ago. This is from the New York Post. It says sanitation workers outraged over the order to get inoculated against COVID-19 are letting trash pile up across Staten Island and in parts of Brooklyn. And the head of their union said Wednesday that he's on their side. The protesting workers are engaging in a rulebook slowdown that includes returning to their garages for things like gloves or gas so collections don't get finished, sources said. Supervisors have even been warned to guard the garages this weekend to prevent trucks from getting vandalized. It says when asked what was going on, Teamsters local President Harry Nespoli, whose union represents the sanitation workers, shot back. He said, the mandate's going on. That's what's happening. That's why we're in the midst of this slowdown. It's kind of like the sick out with Southwest Airlines. They don't want it. At least a third, in some cases more than a third. They don't want to get jabbed. They don't want the side effects. They don't need, some of them had natural antibodies, but that doesn't matter to the experts. You've got to get the vaccine. You've just got to do it. Listen to this. What's the clip of the this is the CEO of Pfizer, and it's someone on one of the cable shows. It was just 2-3 days ago that the FDA said, okay, we can go ahead and get it to 5-year-olds now and get you know right where I'm going. But guess where they go after the 5-year-olds are approved for this poison? Listen to this clip.
Let me push it back even further. What about 2 to 4-year-olds? Are there data being gathered on that? Do you expect at some point we will be able to inoculate even children as young as 2?
I do expect to do that. Of course, the studies need to be completed. I'm optimistic because I have seen these results between 5 and 11.
Who are these CEOs, by the way? We played you the one from Moderna yesterday. Are they even American? They don't sound like Americans. I guess that doesn't matter one way or another. But it's all part of the attack, which makes it interesting. But here, as you would expect, here's the commentator egging them on. What about two-year-olds? I mean, these people have lost their minds. A two-year-old that is not in any danger whatsoever coming from this virus. But there's Pfizer. Oh, yeah, this is great. I think by the end of the year, well, the studies will be done. I mean, we're rushing as fast as we can. And it's sort of like that Maria Bartiromo interview where they're like filled with glee over this drug. It's like they worship this drug. Even when you've got a lot of ordinary workers saying no, thank you. Well, now it's coming down to the wire for these people. The head of the New York Firefighters Union, he's telling his firefighters, look, don't give in. It's something like 32% that are unvaccinated. What happens in a big city where you lose about a third of your workforce? In so many of these cases, there's no contingency plan. So in the case of the garbage pickup, it's just going to stack, it's going to pile high, I guess. This is from Reuters. Based on current vaccination rates and the threat of unpaid leave, the city could see up to 20% of fire units close and fewer ambulances on the road, the department said. So fewer ambulances, no trash pickup, fire departments closing, law enforcement officials laid off. Does anyone understand what's going to happen if this goes forward? What about the mandate for the U.S. military? If a third of the military hasn't gotten the jab, do you just say goodbye to a third of the U.S. military force? Hundreds of thousands of soldiers? I guess so, because the only war that matters in the minds of these deranged lunatics, the only war that matters is World War Flu. That's it. That is it. It doesn't matter if our cities go up in flames. It doesn't matter if we leave ourselves vulnerable to an attack from without. We gotta stamp out this flu. We gotta get the two-year-olds jabbed. 2 years old. Someone brought up a good point, too, about the dosage for 5 to 11 years old. It's a third of what you would give to someone 12 and above. So if you're 12, you get a full dose. If you're just a few months younger, it's a third. It's a third. Well, because the science, right? The science. Does any of this make sense to you? Of course it doesn't. It's an attack. It's all part of the plan. The plandemic. And meanwhile, the economy, it's just grinding to a halt. This from CNBC yesterday. Economic growth rate slows to 2% on a sharp slowdown in consumer spending. You listen to Biden all the time, and I mean, it's never been better. This, however, is the reality. A sharp slowdown. Move ahead to clip 6.
Take a look at the stock market now. It's higher than it's ever been. I guess it's slim. Everything's doing well. It is. Higher than it's ever been. Not only that, more people are working today than just before the pandemic started. Household wealth is up. People are buying more things. Manufacturing is up. We're on the move, but we're on the right track.
A sharp slowdown. And keep in mind that last year, 2020, everything was shut down. I mean, you talk about an economy grinding to a halt. That was last year. So it would be easy to manipulate the numbers, even just in a little bit, and say, well, hey, the growth is great. I mean, compared to last year, that's true. And yet here's CNBC saying it's a sharp slowdown in consumer spending. What's happening? And then you have the sharp increase in inflation. Fuel prices, food prices, just skyrocketing. And there's the illegitimate president saying that, yeah, everything's great. This is wonderful. They can't even do well with a low bar to begin with. Listen to Joe Biden from yesterday, clip two.
It's fiscally responsible. It's fully paid for. 17 Nobel Prize winners in economics have said it will lower the inflationary pressures on the economy. And over the next 10 years, it will not add to the deficit at all. It will actually reduce the deficit, according to economists.
There he is talking about the infrastructure plan. They keep having to take things out because of Joe Manchin and others that just know it's so obvious. It's just a pork barrel spending. That's all that it is. And for all these left-wing policies, even the skeleton version, they're celebrating. The communists are. Barack Obama, he came out with a statement. He's very active for a former president. You know why, don't you? This is Obama's third term. Of course it is. Business Insider. It says here, this is the title. Obama just called Biden's Build Back Better a giant leap forward. That's some communist language right there. A giant leap forward that will bring affordable child care and universal preschool to millions of Americans. It quotes Obama, taking the long view in his typical style. Former President Barack Obama issued a statement Thursday touting the reworked Build Back Better framework despite several key progressive priorities falling by the wayside. It says, in a country as large and diverse as ours, progress can often feel frustrating and slow, with small victories accompanied by frequent setbacks, Obama said in the statement from his post-presidency office. He calls it his post-presidency office. It's just down the street from the White House. And all these dozens and dozens of Obama officials working for Joe Biden in the White House. And then Joe Biden taking all these trips. Even the left-wing press is alarmed. Yeah, he's leaving for Delaware or wherever every single weekend. Obama said, but once in a while, it's still possible to take a giant leap forward. Our news gatherers noted this morning that that was the same language used by the communists in China just a few years before millions and millions of people were slaughtered, mass murder. This is communist ideology. Through and through, oh yeah, build back better. Everything's just improving and booming. And then when the stats come in, when the figures come in, the percentages, they just explain it away. Look, we're making some sacrifices. This is kind of the new normal. 2% growth? That's disastrous for this administration. And yet, look at this article from 2014. This is the title, Team Obama. This is during Obama's years. Team Obama. Sorry, America. The new normal may be here to stay. Listen to this. The good times may be over for good. In a speech at the Economic Club in New York, U.S. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew, so he worked for Obama, he said that the U.S. GDP growth rate, adjusted for inflation, is now projected to run a little above 2% a year. 2%. That sounds familiar. That's where we are today. It says that would be a significant downshift from the 3.4% average growth rate from the end of World War II to 2007. Just a continuous span of 3-4% growth. It says in his speech, Lew said, listen to this. This is Obama's guy. This is Obama's Treasury Secretary in 2014. Lew was quoted as saying, many today wonder whether something that has always been true in our past will be true in our future. And then in parentheses, the article says, indeed, the 2013 Obama budget declared in the 21st century, real GDP growth in the U.S. is likely to be permanently slower than it was in earlier eras. Obama came along and said, as the slowdown came in with all of his communist policies, Obama said, hey, this is the new normal. You're going to have to, I guess, tighten the belts financially, America. 2%, that's about what we can expect from here on out. He said, this is permanent. And then you know what happened? You remember what happened in 2017? There was a four-year period where there was just explosive growth. And then they steal the election, and here we are again. It's Obama. It's Obama all over again. Making America poorer is what it amounts to. Ordinary Americans. You may have seen the story yesterday. The White House deliberating over how to compensate these illegal aliens who went through the trauma of being split apart from their children for a few days after they illegally crossed the border. They get into the United States. They take advantage of the system. You have these communist agencies like the ACLU that's happy to help them. Here's some lawyers. Take the government to court. Take Donald Trump to court because he split up the family for a few days. I mean, I like how they just zero right into 2018 as if this policy didn't go back to Bill Clinton. Obama himself put children in cages. But they just focus in on the 2018 group. And now here comes Biden saying, you know what? Rather than fight this in court, we're just going to dole out $500,000 per person. Make illegal immigrants rich. I guess you can't say again, but I mean, they're making illegal immigrants great, richer, more prosperous. And it's per person. So I guess you split up the adult from the child, and I mean, they're going to make them millionaires. Even as ordinary Americans are losing their jobs and they can't afford to pay for food and fuel. Not like they used to, anyway. I mean, this is an attack on America. This is the outcome they want. That's right. They could change any of this in a second. But it's all part of the plan, isn't it? This is from American Greatness. Making the point we've made quite often on this show. The Democrats understand they will likely lose their majorities in 2022. It is this acceptance that propels them to such vicious, irreverent, and unprecedented lows. They are acting in desperation. I mean, they'll still cheat and try to do everything that they'll try to cheat next week in Virginia. You should look at the poll numbers there, by the way. How do you, in just a few weeks, have a 13% swing where Youngkin is trailing by 5, 6%? Now he's leading by 8%, I think it was. How does that happen? Well, it happens when the dear leader comes in and says, hey, all this talk about rape in school, it's just phony and fake. Well, we'll see if the Virginia voters have anything to say about that. Yep, that's right. Tucker Carlson called him out, as you've heard this week on this show. Called him a heartless monster. That's what's behind so many of these policies. I know there's a few the talking heads on TV saying that, well, if we don't get behind this $450,000 per illegal immigrant, then we're racist. You heard the montage at the top. It's all that they have. You must be a racist. You must be an insurrectionist. You must be a terrorist. Even as they dole out millions and millions, or at least they want to illegal immigrants, they're already getting free rides and plane rides over to halfway across the country. Checking into hotels. Hey, everything's on Uncle Sam. The plane flight, the food, the debit cards, the overnight stays in nice hotels. And now, seriously, $450,000? They're not just setting them up in an apartment. They're making them wealthy. And how do you think the voters in America, forget about it, Virginia, how do you think the voters all across America, what do you think they think about this? This American Greatness piece says, it says, this desperation explains the rapid pace of their efforts to nationalize elections, expand the welfare state, import illegals in record numbers, drive up the national debt, and fundamentally transform America. It's Obama's third term, isn't it? Of course it is. 74 of Biden's top 100 aides worked in the Obama administration. Merrick Garland, who was denied appointment to the Supreme Court during the Obama administration, is now Biden's attorney general. Obama's surgeon general, Vivek Murthy, is currently the surgeon general again under the Biden administration. It's just Obama 3.0. So too are the tactics and the policies of the Biden administration, identical to those of the Obama administration. Taxpayer dollars to fly illegal, unaccompanied minors, and so on and so on. The letter sent to schools on transgender policies. It's just the same story, different chapter. It says, while Obama recently admitted that this fundamental transformation is coming too rapidly for a big portion of the population, there is no indication that he or his party have plans to slow down. Our country is being invaded by illegals, inflation, and our debt will continue to rise, and the American people will continue to suffer. This is all by design. It's part of the fundamental transformation Obama promised in 2008. He's desperate. He's desperate to finish the job. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, send us your comments, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering, unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. When you make your request, don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Just one more news item, a fairly important one at that, before we transition over to our Bible study. The state of Wisconsin, there was a sheriff that came out yesterday and gave a press conference and talked about what he had found in, I think, Racine County. In any event, in 2016 and 2018, the two election cycles before 2020, Wisconsin had about 70,000 voters classified as indefinitely confined, meaning that they could, these were people in nursing homes, and they were basically, they had the right to request a mail-in ballot. Then comes along 2020, the year of the pandemic, and that number went from 70,000 indefinitely confined to 265,000, almost 266. So 200,000 new indefinitely confined voters. Now, these individuals still had to have a photo ID on file, and there's some pretty strict laws in Wisconsin. Really, Wisconsin could be overturned quicker than even the other five swing states because of how strict their voting laws are or were, even coming up to the election steal of last November. The law stated that if you're to cast a vote in this way from a nursing home, that they'd get help from special voting deputies. One Republican would come in, one Democrat would come in. There would be two people there to sort of arbitrate it, to make sure that, you know, whoever's in the nursing home, to make sure that they understood what they were doing, that they didn't have dementia or anything like that. But leading up to November of 2020, because of COVID, well, we can't send a Republican and Democrat into the nursing homes. It's too dangerous. I mean, we could send the plumbers and the electricians and all these other essential workers, but for voting in a U.S. election, let's just remove the restrictions. And this election commission just basically did it willy-nilly. They say, well, never mind what the law says. We've got to change it here. I mean, this is a pandemic after all. So the WEC, the Wisconsin Election Commission, decided that these observers couldn't go in. So they just sort of left it to the local level and who knows how many activists that were engaged in farming these votes through nursing homes. Listen to this sheriff's presentation from yesterday, clip 4.
But what's interesting is the governor's office tells the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which is an agency under the governor does not have the power to suspend parts of Wisconsin's voting law even during an emergency. The governor can't do it. But the Wisconsin Elections Commission on March 12th sent out a letter and they state municipalities shall not use the special voting deputy process. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not a process, it's a law. Is they're telling municipalities to not follow the law. Coincidentally, they say it's because special voting deputies are considered non-essential. And I did an open records request and said, how did you come to the determination that special voting deputies are non-essential? And they basically just referenced me back to this letter and by implication stated, well, we just decided. So no individual other than an SVD or a relative may assist the voter. That means the staff at the facility absolutely, positively cannot, by this law, assist in the execution of the vote. Commissioner Knutson even states, and I will preface this, he was talking about the polling places, but he even states that we need the flexibility to not follow the law. They flat out say it in their meeting, they need the flexibility to not follow the law. Commissioner Knutson literally states, we need to go back to following the law, but not for SVDs. Commissioner Spindell states he's concerned with fraud in nursing homes. And at one point, Commissioner Spindell, because he's from Milwaukee, states that he literally has hundreds of ballots floating around residential care facilities. Hundreds of ballots, unsecure, just in his area. And there's 72 counties in the state of Wisconsin. Nonetheless, at this meeting, the WEC votes 5-1. Spindell votes against it, 5-1 to suspend the special voting deputy law.
They just decided that they were going to change the law, never mind what the Wisconsin state legislature had determined. And yesterday I told you about the Delaware audit that here again found all of these dead people. And you know how this sheriff was alerted to this, why he conducted this investigation? Because there were families of people with dementia, people in nursing homes that couldn't think straight. In a lot of ways, it's perfect, isn't it? The dementia vote came out in full force in 2020, and now we've got a president with dementia. It's perfect. You can't make this stuff up. The families come forward and say, why did our grandmother, or why did mom or dad vote? Who coached them, basically? It's a good question. And the sheriff really doesn't have all of that as far as evidence is concerned. He's just pointing out that these laws were just shoved aside or suspended. And that violates laws. Now, he'd like for the state attorney general to do something about this, but he's a Democrat, so that's not likely to happen. Listen again to this sheriff from yesterday, clip 5.
And it's blown up right here. It says how to assist the voter in filling out their absentee ballots. This is sent to residential care facilities, basically nursing homes. And they're instructing the employees of the nursing homes who explicitly cannot assist in the vote. They say if a voter requests assistance, you may read the ballot, including candidates' names, party affiliations, and ballot instructions to the voter, or mark the ballot as directed by the voter. Believe it or not, that is the completion of the crime right there. Crimes throughout the state, all 72 counties, every nursing home, resident care facility right there, that, according to 12.13, which we're going to get into, that is a violation of state law. This is Knudsen, Commissioner Knudsen, and I kind of referenced what he was saying before, but literally I want you to hear it from the commissioners.
I have had discomfort, and I expressed it publicly the day that I had first suggested this, that we will be essentially telling the clerks to break the law. And over the ensuing months since, you know, I first wrote to the governor about my concern about the effect of the COVID virus in the elderly back in mid-March of last year, so it's 10 months ago now. Is there some other way that we can accomplish the same thing to give this, to make this guidance rather than us, you know, formally directing them not to do it? I mean,
that's the commissioner himself basically saying, you know, we're telling these elderly homes, these caregivers, to just forget about the law. You don't need the special voting deputies to come in and do it by the law. Just, it opened the way for cheating on a grand scale. That's what it amounts to. And they used COVID as an excuse. It's interesting in this sheriff's presentation, his slideshow, he talks about all the essential workers that were just allowed to come in and out of this particular nursing home. 24 people entered the care home for job interviews. Well, you got to get people in for job interviews. That's essential. 4 times instructors came to the home to do classes with seniors. He's observing just one nursing home, as I understand it. 4 times instructors came to the home to do classes. That's essential. A repairman or repairmen in and out throughout the pandemic. Fix the plumbing, fix the sink, fix the electricity, the lights, whatever. They in and out. It's essential. DoorDash delivery guys allowed in, but not special voting deputies. You don't need any oversight over voting for a U.S. president in an elderly care facility. That's what the Wisconsin Election Commission determined on its own in violation against the state law. Wouldn't it be interesting? Wouldn't it be refreshing to actually see some kind of courageous prosecutor say, hey, you broke the law. The sheriff says, I don't even know who voted for who or what it says on these extra 200,000 votes. But it's important that we follow the law. That was the point that he was making yesterday. All right, let us shift gears abruptly and finish on a very positive note. I gave a forum to the students just, I think it was a week and a half ago, where we talked about the proverb that says that a man that has no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down without walls. And so it's important for us to control or to govern ourselves well, to make sure we rule our own spirit. The Moffat translation says, a man with no control over himself is like a town with broken walls. We have no protection, no safety, if we don't control ourselves. And of course, this is an important message for all of us, but certainly for young people especially, as you see more and more of them just out of control. They're not taught self-control. They're not taught temperance in modern education. They're taught to just satisfy every lustful desire and impulse. They're taught and encouraged to go out and destroy things if you need to make a statement. Sometimes that's wholly justified. Here at God's College, we teach discipline and order. That's the way God is. He's the God of obedience and orderliness. Not of confusion and disorder. I referred more recently, I think this was Tuesday, I referred to the example of Winston Churchill, a young man at the time, in his early 20s, He had gone off to military school. He graduated by this point. He's out on assignment now in India. And think about this. Think about this with respect to self-control and also just the point of drive and ambition to really make something of himself. I mean, it's, the self-control works in two directions, as Herbert Armstrong often said. You've got to suppress or put down those carnal pulls of the flesh, but also you've got to, there's the element of self-propulsion, doing what you need to do, what you know you should do. That takes some drive. That takes some ruling the spirit well. Also, this is about Winston Churchill. It says, after, I think this was at The Art of Manliness, after Sandhurst, Winston felt the world opened like Aladdin's cave. His life was still subject to the routines and rituals of military discipline, but the possibilities for adventures of his own choosing increased manyfold, as did his time for studying whatever he pleased. It says, though his formal schooling had ended, Churchill began an autodidact phase that would last until his death. As his 23rd birthday approached, the desire for learning came upon him, and he began to feel that he was wanting in even the vaguest knowledge about many large spheres of thought. Thus, while stationed at his first post in India, Winston read books on philosophy, politics, economics, and sociology for 4 to 5 hours a day. And this is where, of course, he fell in love with English as well, the English language. And he became later on in life quite the historian, quite the author, quite the speaker, quite the leader. He drove himself. He educated himself. So much of his education happened after his training in military school. Now, Herbert Armstrong, when he was talking about education in his autobiography, he talked about the experiences that you have, travel, lectures that you hear, thinking about what you see and hear, the contacts that you make, and, of course, the lessons that you learn from your studies, from reading, study. Blessed are those who read and study this book, it says in Revelation 1. I gave you that example a few programs ago about Joe Biden's Build Back Better plan and how that nobody knows what's in it. Nobody in Congress knows what's in it. They don't waste their time reading 2,000 pages of left-wing activist agenda points. It's like Nancy Pelosi said years ago, let's hurry on and pass this legislation so that we can then find out what's in it. The same mentality for rolling out the vaccine. We'll find out if it's safe after the fact. Just get it out there. Get it into 5-year-olds. No, get it into 2-year-olds. They're banking on the fact. Biden's people admit it. They're banking on the fact that most people aren't really clued in. They don't really pay attention even. This was from that article about the Build Back Better plan. It's from Bloomberg. It says, Biden's advisors are banking on the presumption that ordinary Americans don't pay much attention to the machinations of everyday Washington. Much as they were during the presidential campaign, the president's aides are largely dismissive of what they call horse race stories. They just dismiss any critic. A Republican said it? Well, he's a terrorist. He's an insurrectionist. He's a racist. That's the way they dismiss it. They're banking on the fact that Americans just don't pay attention to it. And in a lot of ways, you can't blame Americans. But when you look at the society as a whole, people don't just dig in and study and learn the details about things the way that they once did. We're so overly reliant on screens for getting our information. The study from the Bureau of Labor Statistics on American time use. Top leisure activity for 2019, watching TV. Average among all age groups between 2 to 3 hours per day. 2 to 3 hours per day. At the bottom of the chart, this is how we use our time. At the bottom of the chart, reading clocked in at 13 to 18 minutes per day. Reading. Now just think about if those numbers were reversed. Think about if, on average, Americans were reading 2 to 3 hours a day and only watching 13 to 18 minutes of television per day. What would that just automatically do to ordinary Americans? Well, for one, we'd be a lot more informed, assuming we were reading, you know, good things, obviously, truth, history, nonfiction. There's plenty of horrific material in the written word. We went into that even yesterday. This guy reading the pornography book in front of that school board. But supposing you actually were filling your minds with good information, with truth, well, Americans would be a lot more informed. They'd know the truth on a lot more hot-button issues. I've quoted before from this Roger Kimball piece on the truth about January 6th. He said, look, it's a hoax. That was not an insurrection. That's a hoax. And you just need to get in there. Of course, in this case, if you can put together, Tucker Carlson's got a video on this coming out next week. And let me tell you, the radical left is worried about this because he's pulled the video together. He's going to show it. He's going to expose the hoax. And the devil, as I've said so many times, hates to be exposed. They just like to, you know, it's like that opening montage at the start of the show. Insurrection, insurrection, insurrection. They just say it over and over and over again. They don't care about the facts. They don't care about what actually happened. Hopefully, Tucker's people have put together some compelling evidence that will convince a few people to maybe look into it a little bit further. I mean, it's not news to this program, obviously. We've from the beginning of this year, have exposed the lies that were told about that protest from the beginning, from the start. It's just like with the pandemic. It's just like with the election. It's just happening over and over again in the closing of the American mind. Alan Bloom's classic. He said, at all events, whatever the cause, our students have lost the practice of and the taste for reading. They have not learned how to read, nor do they have the expectation of delight or improvement from reading. They just don't like it. They haven't learned how to do it. They haven't learned how to enjoy it. Bloom says, the failure to read good books both enfeebles the vision and strengthens our most fatal tendency, the belief that the here and now is all there is. See, we lose context when we're not reading and studying. We just deceive ourselves into thinking that what's right in front of our faces, that's all there is. It says here, the loss of books has made students narrower and flatter. Narrower because they lack what is most necessary, a real basis for discontent with the present and awareness that there are alternatives to it. They are both more contented with what is and despairing of ever escaping from it. The longing for the beyond has been attenuated. The very role models for admiration and contempt have vanished. Flatter, he says, because without interpretations of things, without the poetry of or the imagination's activity, their souls are like mirrors, not of nature, but of what is around. And on he goes. It's made us shallower, in other words. We've lost a taste for reading, and we're shallower because of it. We're more superficial. We're not as educated. We're not as informed. We're more ignorant. We've drifted farther from God and the laws and the principles of God's truth, God's law. We've been studying through the Ten Commandments in doctrines over the past week and a half or so. Such a deep subject. The law of God. Jeremiah the prophet, you can read Psalm 119. He just went on and on about the riches and depths of it. And how that he thought all through the day trying to wrap his mind around the depth of God's law. Mr. Armstrong in The Missing Dimension in Sex, he talked about the predominant influence coming from the younger generation in our world today, the Western world, that is, that it's predominantly coming at us with sexual themes and with themes of violence and crime and murder. And we've just finished our study of the sixth and seventh commandments. Thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not commit adultery, and all that goes into that, and all that that covers, and how that God, in just those two very basic, straightforward commands, in just a few words, by the way, when has Washington ever passed any kind of legislation that wasn't 2,000 pages? God says, in simple language, thou shalt not murder. And the spirit that's behind that command, it includes hate. It includes not loving the way that we should, as I covered the other day. And what about the spirit behind thou shalt not commit adultery? Well, that includes lust. And that would eliminate, it certainly will in the world tomorrow, that's going to eliminate a lot of filthy entertainment so that lust doesn't well up in our hearts. God wants to protect the family. God values human life so much so that he protects it with a command that says, thou shalt not murder. And if you do, the murderer is put to death. Did you know it's capital punishment for the adulterer as well? That's what God thinks about saving, protecting, preserving human life and the most important relationship in human life, that of marriage and family. It's a wonderful and holy and precious law of God, and it's worth delving into deeply. Proverbs 3 and verse 13, it says, happy is the man that finds wisdom and the man that gets understanding. See, if we find the wisdom of God, and that, of course, means that we're searching for it, we've got to go out and get it. But if we find it, it really is satisfying. Matthew 5 talks about having a hunger and thirst for righteousness, for God's truth. If we really are hungry for God and His truth, God will satisfy that hunger. John 6, study that chapter sometime. Jesus said there, don't let one little morsel go to waste. Gather up all the fragments. And he was talking about study. Of course, the most important book we have in that regard is the Holy Bible. Studying God's Word. Happy is the man that finds wisdom and the man that gets understanding. This is something that you don't just do when you're at God's college for 2 or 4 years. This is talking about a way of life, as I was telling the students just this week. This mindset, this hunger for, it's just like Winston Churchill. It continued just like that author said right up until the end of his life. And that's the way it is for us as God's people. Even after graduation, the hunger for truth, the study, the earnest and diligent study of the Scriptures, it continues right on through to the end of our physical life. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily, not brought to you by Pfizer or Moderna or any of the other big pharma companies. It's brought to you by God's family. Can't hardly believe we're putting the finishing touches on yet another week of broadcasting here on KPCG and over our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio, and of course the website, our website, thetrumpet.com. Send us some feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks again for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow. It'll be next week.